This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Zero. Not worrying that at all. It's not in my control. I can't worry about that. I'm with the Manitoba Moose. I got to win games down here. I really haven't watched many Jets games this year, to be honest with you. I don't really know how they're doing. We're kind of every other day right now, back and forth games, and it's kind of nice to get away from hockey a little bit when you go home. But
that was Manitoba Moose goaltender Eric Comrie earlier this week. Hope you enjoyed the action between the Moose and the Griffins. The Moose dropping a 2-1 decision in overtime as they start a road trip. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL this week. A blustery Wednesday evening. If you are out and about, if you're on the roads, take your time. It is slippery. It's only going to get worse as the wind picks up. And if for some reason you are planning on venturing outside of the city limits towards the U.S. border on Highway 75, please be advised you are not able to do that. Highway 75 closed from Winnipeg to the U.S. border. It's one of those nights where you're best off staying close to home with the wind and everything else. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleague Ezra Ginsberg, and on the most important news of the week, new father Sean Asor. Congratulations, Shawnee. You and your lovely girlfriend adopting a brand new dog. Congratulations on that.
I am now the second most handsome guy in our house.
Yeah.
It's tough. Yeah. It's tough. It's a new adjustment for me.
I know.
It's a good-looking dog.
Oh, I was going to say,
I saw the
good-looking
Instagram
co-host.
Pics,
yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it's exciting. Very, very, I don't want to say spontaneous, but happened pretty quickly.
Yeah.
We met lovely Balto. We adopted him. If you are interested in having a doggy date with a furry friend, go to Winnipeg Animal Services. They do a tremendous job setting you up. A lot of lovely dogs there looking for homes. And we did the classic fostering for a weekend, then we returned him. And then I was in a complete shamble of state, crying. And
yeah, you missed the dog.
I missed him, and then
we
went back the next day and adopted him.
And then when you have to walk him tomorrow in minus 40,
walked him before the show.
Yeah, and today was okay to walk.
I got to walk him tonight, too, so.
It'll be a little windy. you stay close to home. You dress warm for that dog walk.
It's all right.
But Shawnee, Balto is a husky shepherd, so those dogs, I mean, they love this weather.
This is nothing for him. We tie him up in the backyard because we don't have a fence yet, and he just chills. He just lies there. He's having a great time.
Yeah. You don't have nearly as much fur as Balto does to stay warm in this weather. Yeah. In any event, welcome to NHL this week. A quiet week, as you know, for the Winnipeg Jets. They are on their bye week since their last game on Saturday, that defeat in Dallas, when you could sort of see they played at least the first 40 minutes of that game like they were already on their way out to the airport to head off to their sunny destinations. And, as we sit here on this midweek during the bye week and the All-Star game is this weekend, sort of gives us an opportunity to maybe take a step back and look at the season thus far for the Winnipeg Jets, as you're through, what are they now, through 48 games or so at this point in time, and they're atop the Central Division, and we know the big victory that they had last Thursday in Nashville. That was sort of the marquee game on the schedule. They are where you wanted them to be, I would suggest, at this point in time. From a fan's perspective, the Jets atop the Central Division, them and Nashville are running away with the division, really, and they're going to finish 1-2 in the Central Division, and who knows where they're going to finish overall in the NHL. But the Jets, at this point in time, through 48 games, I think most fans would say they're building on what they accomplished last season, and it's going to be similar, if not better, when this season comes to an end.
Right. And you mentioned, you're sitting in first place, Drew, plus you've got the games in hand,
mm-hmm.
right? And as you mentioned, you expected the Jets and Predators to be first and second in the Central. You maybe just didn't expect Colorado to be as far back as they are right now, but mm-hmm. you're absolutely right. I think the Jets know that the regular season, guys, is really just a formality. I mean, nobody is really challenging the Jets or Predators right now in the Central, and I don't really see any other team in that division being in the second round. I think I've said this all along, and I'm not the only one, guys. I mean, it's really most likely going to be Jets and Preds in the second round, and Yeah, Drew, there's definitely things that you like about this team. The power play, even though the power play hasn't been as good lately.
Mm-hmm. They have Dustin Byfuglien in the lineup.
Yeah, and that's part of it. So you've seen Jacob Trouba on the top power play unit. You've seen Morrissey there as well. But the power play is still top five in the NHL. The special teams overall have been pretty good. Lauren Brossoit has been maybe the biggest surprise of any backup goaltender in the entire league. But there's also things maybe that you don't like as much. And, you know, that starts with Patrick Laine. Even though Laine's got 25 goals right now, overall it's been a bit of a struggle for him in the first 48 games. And if you take away, Shawnee, that month of November, I mean, Laine's not having a great year. What did he have, 18 goals, Drew, in 1 month?
Yeah, it was incredible.
So in the other 3 months, he's got seven? I mean, that's not very good. December specifically was really bad for him. And it's not just the goals, right, guys? It's the way he's played on a night-in and night-out basis. Sometimes he's really fighting it. So there is some bad. Connor Hellebuck, I think, can be better. I'm not saying he's been bad, but he certainly at times hasn't played at the same level as last year, right? And Brossoit's got, what, 11 wins now? 10 wins, 11 wins. So, I mean, Brossoit's got a third of the wins for the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
So where would the Jets be without Brossoit? They might not be in first.
Brossoit has certainly been a revelation. And if you had to say what has been the surprise of the season so far, I think for the Jets you would suggest it's been the performance of Lauren Brossoit. Everyone else has sort of been what you would expect to, you know, in some degree or another. I mean, Lauren Brossoit is the guy that nobody knew. You know, people thought he'd be in a battle with Eric Comrie in training camp for that backup goalie position. And, you know, Brossoit has been, as we mentioned, incredible for the Jets. And every time they've put him in the net, he's given them stellar goaltending. And then Eric Comrie, who we heard from off the top there, is also playing very good hockey for the Manitoba Moose. He was the AHL Player of the Week that was announced earlier in the week. He played tonight in Grand Rapids, as you heard the call with Mitch Peacock. And, yeah, they dropped the game in overtime, but it's a 2-1 defeat in overtime. So you have another goaltender playing well within the organization for the Jets, which leads me to the question about Mike McIntyre and his column in the Winnipeg Free Press earlier this week, which I know you guys read about how Comrie, you know, there's a ceiling above him right now. He's playing very good hockey, but with Brossoit still, you know, under the Jets' quote-unquote control as a restricted free agent at season's end, and Hellebuck obviously firmly entrenched as the number one goaltender, is Eric Comrie potentially going to be on the trade block as the Jets get closer to the trade deadline, as they look to shore up portions of the team entering into the playoffs? Is Eric Comrie one of those chips the Jets could be dangling in trying to acquire a player who can put them over the top?
Yeah, it's a good question, Drew, because right now you look at what Comrie's doing, and you mentioned the Moose didn't win tonight, but he still had 35 or 36 saves, I believe, and you know, he's played the third most minutes. He's got the third best save percentage. And when you look at what the other two standout goalies have done, Jordan Binnington has been amazing for St. Louis.
He's playing, He was an AHL goalie.
And he was putting up great numbers in the American Hockey League. And Colin Delia is another guy that was putting up excellent numbers in the AHL. And then he went up and he got the call up to the Blackhawks. So if you're Eric Comrie, you're thinking, okay, well, what's going on here? I mean, I know that Lauren Brossoit is the backup goaltender. I know that Connor Hellebuck is the number one goaltender. Brossoit's playing great. Unless there's an injury, I'm not getting called up. But back to your question, I don't necessarily know that Eric Comrie, Shawnee, is on the trading block. But when you look long-term or even short-term next year, where does he fit in? And he's only got 1 year left on his contract. So if you're Comrie, you're probably thinking, you know, maybe I'm best suited on another team next year.
And just you look at the way he's playing, and you rattled off those numbers and where he ranks in goaltenders among AHL netminders, and he's probably the Jets' biggest asset right now on the trade market, their most valued potentially, if they are going to dangle a prospect. I mean, him or maybe Christian Vesalainen, and I'm not saying that they are trading either of those guys by any means, but if the Jets are going to make a move and a prospect is going to be asked for, I mean, me and Ryan Brandt were talking about this yesterday on the roundtable. What are Mason Appleton and Brendan Lemieux prospects anymore with this team? Or have they played themselves out of that category? And when you're looking at trade bait now, have they surpassed Nick Petan? And has potentially Comrie and another forward also? I mean, it's really interesting when you look at the roster and who the Jets will dangle out there.
Right, Shawnee, because if the Jets are going after a top four defenseman or they're going after a top six forward, I don't think Kyle Connor is in the conversation. I don't even think Jack Roslovic is in the conversation. Depends who we're talking about here, but if you're talking about...
I don't think Appleton's in the conversation either.
No, well, the stability that he's provided on that fourth line has been pretty impressive.
Appleton's a lesser known than Kyle Connor and Jack Roslovic, but specifically when people start to say, you know, would you have to give up a Kyle Connor or Jack Roslovic? No. Sure, Drew, throw in Mason Appleton. But when you're talking about the more unknowns, you're talking about Christian Vesalainen. Sure, Christian Vesalainen is putting up good numbers for Jokerit in the Continental Hockey League, but he's still young and unproven. I think he's got a bright future, and we don't necessarily know if he's going to be a second-line guy or is he going to be a third-line player. But I agree with what Sean says. I think teams are calling about Eric Comrie. I think teams are calling about Christian Vesalainen. I don't know if Kevin Cheveldayoff wants to trade either one of those players, but those are the top two prospects with the least amount of NHL experience. So if you do want to acquire a, you know, throw out a name, a Kevin Hayes, maybe that's who the Rangers want.
I think those guys are if they were to be included or discussed in a trade, it's more than for a pure rental. I mean, you look at what the Jets gave up to acquire Paul Stastny last year. So they gave up a first-round pick, which ended up being somewhere around between 25 and 30, so not an overwhelmingly significant first-round pick, but a first-round pick's a first-round pick, and Eric Foley. Now, I mean, I would be lying if I told you what the trajectory is for Eric Foley's future pro career. But, I mean, he's going to be a professional hockey player. He already is, of course, at the AHL level right now. But, I mean, if you're calling the Jets and you want Eric Comrie or you want Christian Vesalainen, this is you are giving back a player. The Jets are acquiring a player who's got term on his contract and who is going to be a member of the Jets for longer than just a playoff run. I don't know if that's necessarily the case if you're calling to ask about Nick Pétain, because Nick Pétain, we know, is closer to an unrestricted free agent point of view. I mean, a couple years away still, but I don't know where Nick Pétain's trajectory is within the Jets organization.
Right, and that's why, Kevin Hayes actually is a bad example because, as you mentioned, he's only got 1 year left on his contract. Jake Muzzin has 1 year left on his contract after this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you want to get a Jake Muzzin, for example, would Nick Pétain and a late first-round pick get Jake Muzzin?
I don't know.
They were asking for, a first-round pick and a prospect. That's apparently the asking price
Muzzin.
Pretty standard.
But, I mean, you remember last year, Buffalo with Evander Kane. Remember what they ended up trading Kane for was a second conditional first-round pick. It was a conditional second-round pick that turned into a first-round pick and a prospect. So, it all depends on if it's a buyer's market or if it's a seller's market.
And Kane was a pending UFA.
And he was a pending UFA. He ended up re-signing in San Jose. So it all depends. I mean, if you're the Jets and you can get Jake Muzzin for Nick Pétain and a first-round pick, I'm probably making that trade if I'm Kevin Cheveldayoff.
Absolutely.
But, if you want a guy like Vesalainen or if you want another guy, within the Jets organization.
Maybe someone calls and asks for Sammy Niku.
Well, Sammy Niku is going to cost you more than just that. And you're going to give up a guy who – you're going to be acquiring a guy who's got years left on his contract, who's going to be a key member of your team for a while going forward. Mm-hmm. But the trade deadline is just over a month away, so we will, of course, know more closer to that date, and all the coverage will be brought to you here on TSN Radio 1290. When we come back, we discuss the news out of Edmonton. Peter Chiarelli mercifully dismissed as general manager. The gong show that the Oilers are is discussed next. You're listening to the NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
In the last 10 years, this team's had 8 different head coaches. This will be their 4th general manager. It seems like the problems run much deeper than head coach and general manager. Why can't this organization get it right?
You know what? I think your point there about just changing is dead on. And that's why I'm not going to be in a real rush to get a general manager. We have to get the right one. And if that takes us some time, because we have to look at all parts of this organization, I want to emphasize again, we got some real good players. We've got some real good staff. But there's something in the water here in Edmonton that we don't have right, and we got to get that figured out.
Something in the water in Edmonton.
I've been to Edmonton. The water tasted fine.
Yeah, seems to be fine. That's the big go-to line out of Bob Nicholson's press conference from earlier today. The Oilers, as I mentioned, fire Peter Chiarelli last night during the second intermission, because that's normally when you fire your general manager, is in the middle of a game that your team is playing. The Oilers losing last night to the Red Wings, Peter Chiarelli losing his job. It all goes hand in hand. Welcome back to NHL This Week, this segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the whole family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. This needed to be done. Is there anybody who didn't think that this needed to be done after this homestand for the Edmonton Oilers, where they had a homestand against a number of weaker opponents, where they could have really maybe taken a leap in the Western Conference standings, and instead they look absolutely enfeebled against teams like the Carolina Hurricanes and last night the Detroit Red Wings, the 31st place team in the NHL entering that game? You couldn't possibly continue with Peter Chiarelli as general manager, having watched the performance of the Edmonton Oilers so far this week.
Yeah, and when you're talking about yesterday's game.
Oh my God.
I mean, I've never watched a game live on TV and thought, okay, the general manager is going to be fired right after this game. Because usually that happens with head coaches.
Yeah.
Right? It's very rare that a general manager in the NHL is fired mid-season or at any point in the season.
Sure.
And you're watching that game and you're thinking, okay, Detroit is the worst team in the entire league.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they're a competitive team,
yeah,
they're still a bad team.
They're still 31st in the standings.
Right,
the standings don't lie.
They're a bad team. They're not like the 17th or 18th place team. No. They're right at the bottom.
31.
And the Oilers are scratching and clawing for every point that they can get.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 2-0 after two periods. They're being badly outplayed.
Yeah.
And then Leon Draisaitl makes it 2-1, and you're thinking, okay, the Oilers are going to tie this game up, and they're going to finally get a win, and they're going to feel better about themselves going into the All-Star break. And then Luke Glendening scores a very weak goal on Mikko Koskinen, who was given this contract out of nowhere.
I preposterous mean, contract.
Nobody saw it coming, Drew, right? Because Mikko Koskinen has outplayed Cam Talbot, Shawnee, but it's not like he's... He's got a .930 save percentage and a 2.1 goals against. He's been, I would just say, pretty good at best.
.910 save percentage and a 2.79 goals against average.
Right.
And that's inflated because lately, in the last month or 6 weeks, his numbers have been absolutely horrendous.
Sure. And if you even go deeper into the analytics and you look at his even strength save percentage or his expected wins and all that type of stuff, I mean, he comes nowhere close to the top 10 or top 15 goalies in the league. And then you're giving him... What is it, $5 million next year?
Four and a half. Three.
That's the average, though.
He's also played...
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I'm just talking about the salary cap.
I think
cap
he gets $5 million of real money, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, okay,
but the point is right, Drew. $4.5 million.
I only ever worry about salary cap.
But the point
he's
is...
He's making more than Andrei Vasilevsky.
Right, right. There you go. Yeah. I mean, segment over.
Cue the commercials.
I mean, this could not get any worse. You mentioned the loss against Carolina.
Yeah.
I mean, 6-1 loss. That was a game that you had to have after a really tough loss against Calgary. So, sure, it's the second game of a back-to-back, and after the game, Shawnee, Ken Hitchcock is talking about how, you know, they just couldn't find enough energy and they just couldn't muster up enough to get the win over Carolina, and then you lay a stink bomb against the Red Wings. So I agree with you. Nobody was surprised that Peter Chiarelli was fired. But you just look at this team and you wonder what's going to change now that Chiarelli's gone. I mean, you start to think of next year and the year after, and that's when the new general manager is really going to have an impact. But as it stands right now, this team just doesn't look good enough to make the playoffs.
You have to burn the whole organization to the ground. And what I mean by that is you have to fire Kevin Lowe, and you have to fire Craig McTavish, and you have to fire Scott Housen. Because those three guys are just three guys who've been with the Oilers. I mean, Housen was a terrible general manager when he was the general manager in Columbus. Before that, he was the assistant in Edmonton, gets fired in Columbus after doing a terrible job, and he gets rehired in Edmonton. I mean, you have bad management in your organization, so it shouldn't come as a shock that you have bad management and you make bad decisions. Because you don't have any... If you had to take a ranking of the top 30 general managers in the NHL, none of these guys are anywhere in there. No one's ever said, you know who's an up-and-coming GM who's going to get another chance? Scott Housen.
There's too many cooks in the kitchen. Think about the guys that you just named.
Yeah.
You didn't even mention Bob Nicholson.
I didn't even mention Keith Gretzky, who's now going to be the interim general manager.
And Keith Gretzky's new to the organization, relatively
speaking. He came over from Boston with Chiarelli. That's the ties.
His background is in scouting.
Yes.
Right? So he scouted for the Boston Bruins. He's got a good record, by the way, in amateur scouting. So, I mean, Keith Gretzky deserves to be the interim GM. And
there's no chance, in my opinion, that he actually becomes the full-time GM.
Well, and you're probably right. But everyone who's saying, well, I mean, it's Wayne Gretzky's younger brother. Of course he's going to be named interim GM. No, it's actually his track record. If you look at his track record previously with Chiarelli Shawnee, I mean, the guy has an impressive resume in scouting and in management. Keith Gretzky just came out of nowhere, right?
That 2015 draft.
Well, Jake DeBrusk was
Jake DeBrusk is a fine player, but you look at who they passed up on in that draft.
Zach Senyshyn is no Kyle Connor.
Yeah. It's inexcusable.
It's true. I mean, they got Brandon Carlo,
who's fine.
He's a defenseman, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was not a great draft for the Boston Bruins. And
you
Keith
could have
Gretzky
Brock Besser. You could have Matt Barzal, Kyle Connor, and Thomas Chabot.
And they don't have any of the three of them.
Or Jack Roslovic.
For them. It was not a great draft for the... I mean, that's why I don't think he's got a real chance at being the long-term general manager in Edmonton. I mean, you just watched that game last night. And, I mean, admittedly, I don't...
I texted you. It was depressing.
It was...
I was watching that game, and I was thinking, okay, this is the moment we've all been waiting for. Peter Chiarelli is going to be fired, and Oilers fans are going to continue to suffer with this crap.
I tweeted it after in response to your tweet. I mean, it was the first time I've ever seen a 17,000-seat funeral home. That's what it was like watching last night.
It's a little bit morbid.
It's a little bit morbid, but I mean, everybody in that arena last night looked like they were watching, you know, a dead man walking. And the team played like they... I mean, the team knows. Those players know that a loss to the Red Wings in that instance is going to cost Chiarelli his job. Unfortunately, the reality is, with the exception of McDavid and Dreisaitl and maybe Nugent Hopkins and maybe Klefbom on the back end, the players can't do anything to improve their fate. They're just not good hockey players. You have an AHL caliber roster.
The roster. Ken Hitchcock said it himself following the game. We are a one-line team, and if you could defend that one line, we're in trouble. I mean, I tuned into the Carolina game following the NFL games on
Sunday,
and literally within 3 seconds of watching that game, I saw some of the worst defensive zone coverage that led to a goal, that led to a backdoor tap-in for the Carolina Hurricanes where no one knew what to do. And I was just sitting there watching. I'm like, I literally can't believe this is a National Hockey League team playing defense because they were completely unaware. Mm-hmm. There was zero effort, and it's just a lack of basic knowledge. I mean, it was strange, and every time you look at Connor McDavid in an interview or he's speaking to the media, the guy looks like he's gone 45 rounds with Tyson in his prime. He just looks like he's had the crap beat out of him.
Boy, he's been beat down by the I mean, he knows. Players know
he looks
more,
like a hostage.
Players know more than anybody else. They know when they're surrounded by players who can't cut it. And, you know, Connor McDavid knows that the guys that are on his team just can't cut it.
And, guys, is it just me, or is the fact that the Oilers are off for 10 more days just make this even worse?
It's amazing.
Right? Well, like, the Jets are off for 7 days, but, you know, the Oilers lose all these games in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And now they go on their vacations, and obviously, you know, Connor McDavid's going to go to the All-Star game, but now you have to think about this for a week and a half.
It's only going to be bad for McDavid because he's going to have to answer questions, when he gets to San Jose, probably on, I don't know if it'll be tomorrow or Friday when they do the media, but McDavid will be in the fire. The rest of the players, they get to go wherever they're going, Florida or Palm Springs or Phoenix, and there's not going to be any media bugging them over there, I promise you, so they get it easy. McDavid's going to be standing in front of the cameras and talking about the team and how lousy they are, so if anybody is going to be in trouble, it's going to be McDavid for having to put up with that.
I think being in the All-Star game in this case, though, I think might be beneficial to McDavid.
Well, he gets to play with good players.
He gets to play elsewhere with good players,
but I think he gets to take his mind off of it. I agree with you, Drew. I mean, some of the media are going to ask him about the season, and they're going to ask him about Peter Chiarelli being fired, but I think a lot of the reporters are going to focus on the All-Star game.
Yeah.
But you have a good point. I mean, there are going to be some questions.
Definitely.
But I think for him, he gets to participate in the skills competition, and we know that he's one of the most skilled, if not the most skilled player in the league, right, Shawnee? So in a way, I think this might be good for him to take his mind off of it. But when the Oilers eventually do come back from their break in 9 days or 10 days, they really got to find whatever they have inside of them and somehow make this interesting and get themselves back into a better frame of mind, get themselves closer to a playoff spot. They're still only 3 or 4 points out of it.
Doesn't matter.
They're not out of it.
So the West
is that bad.
So they win, so they get into the playoffs and they lose in 5 games. It doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, your goal right now is to get into the playoffs.
Sure.
Your goal is not to
win
the
cup. Your goal is to win.
Just win a game.
Last word quickly goes to Jeremy Roenick from last night's NBC Sportsnet broadcast of the Oilers-Red Wings game. "I'm just sitting here watching this game and shaking my head," Roenick said. "I'm boggled that this is a professional hockey league team. The Edmonton Oilers are so bad. They can't put two passes together. Their passing decisions, their positioning defensively, they look, in all three zones, they look confused. They have no idea where they are going. They're throwing hope for passes up the ice, hoping that they catch somebody in a rush where they can get an outnumbered situation. They might have good skaters, fast skaters, but their feet and their hands go so much faster than their brains. They have no idea what they are doing out there, and it shows so much. You've got the Detroit Red Wings, and God bless them, the worst team in the NHL by points with 43, and they look like Stanley Cup champions compared to this Edmonton Oilers team. I can understand why Connor McDavid is as frustrated as he is."
How long is this quote?
It's almost done. He's the only guy that's working, the only guy doing something smart with the puck.
Chapter 2.
"We talk about hockey IQ and some players with great hockey IQ. This team might have, from 18 players, the lowest hockey IQ I've seen in a long time, the way they are playing this game. It's embarrassing. I can understand why there were boos for this team going off the ice after the second period. It's just awful to watch."
You could have read half of that.
That's Jeremy Roenick, NBC Sports Network, live last night. When we come back, Dave Jamieson from TSN 1260 in Edmonton joins us for more. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel alongside Sean Assor and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TSN 1260 in Edmonton, our sister station, we're pleased to welcome to the program Dave Jamieson. Dave, good evening. Thanks so much for doing this on what I'm sure has been a busy day for you and the rest of the crew there at 1260.
We were run off our feet for a bit, but, you know, it's been an interesting day. It's been interesting to gauge the response from Oiler fans. And, you know, I don't think Peter Chiarelli could have run for election in Edmonton because I wouldn't like his chances of winning. So the fact that he was fired early today doesn't catch a lot of people by surprise. But there's a lot of anger, residual anger, because people see him as not having, let's say, looked after the assets of the Oilers as well as maybe, you know, he could have. And now this is a team, you know, you can see the results on the ice. They went into the All-Star break with a really dispiriting loss to the Detroit Red Wings. And, you know, you saw what happened and the fallout from that. So there's a lot of work to be done here.
You know, Dave, I'm not sure if you're an NFL fan, but earlier this year, the Green Bay Packers fired Mike McCarthy after another loss. And, you know, the Green Bay Packers, of course, have one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL in Aaron Rodgers. And I can't help but look at the parallels between Aaron Rodgers and the lack of a supporting cast and Connor McDavid and the lack of a supporting cast that he has. And that it was almost a merciful decision to dismiss Chiarelli, you know, allegedly, you know, before the game even started yesterday, and then to, you know, give him the news during the second intermission. But, I mean, there was just no way that they could stretch this out any longer, given the tenor and given the performance on the ice. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yes, I am very much an NFL fan. But and you're, you know, I think the comparisons to the Packers are apt, and they're not because you, in Rodgers, we know what he is, obviously, and anybody who has seen Connor McDavid play, and they don't have to be an Oiler fan, know he's very special. And people are now, and our fans, who certainly you know, we had a lot of people interacting with us today, and they see these years as being squandered with Connor McDavid. Sure, there was a great season a couple of years ago, and there was the playoff run and so on and so forth. But I think when you have, you know, with all due respect to the guys, you know, playing in Winnipeg, and there's lots of incredible players there, I mean, you probably have the best player on the planet. And so people are rightfully asking, why can't the Edmonton Oilers organization get it right? Like, what is it? And, you know, Bob Nicholson, and I'm sure you've seen it on Twitter and your listeners have seen it, you know, Bob Nicholson said, and I think, I hope he thought it was going to be a funny line when he said there's something in the water in Edmonton.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you, first of all, the company that supplies the water in the city, EPCOR, said, no, the water's really good here, and we take great pride in it. But, you know, all of that said, it is. Now, it's its own meme, it's its own hashtag, I think, and it came off as a little flippant. But all of that said, you know, Bob Nicholson's got a fair bit of equity. He hasn't been in the city very long, you know, just, I think, 3 years and change in terms of being the CEO. And overseeing all of the Oilers Entertainment Group. But, you know, he Bob Nicholson got up there today and said words. Some of them were what you would expect. Some of them, I think, they thought would be reassuring to Oiler fans. Amazingly, Nicholson said that the management group thought the Oilers are pretty close, you know, in terms of they don't need a whole bunch more work. And then, you know, look at the roster. And I would argue.
Dave, you mentioned you had your show earlier today on TSN 1260 Edmonton, and I'm sure Mikko Koskinen was discussed, and you mentioned Bob Nicholson's comments from earlier today, and you know he addressed that Mikko Koskinen was not just signed by GM Peter Chiarelli. That was an organizational signing, but was Bob Nicholson, you know, maybe, you know, not thinking this out clearly along with, you know, the other Oilers management group when they made this signing, not in regards to Peter Chiarelli being fired a couple of days later, but what does this say about Cam Talbot? Obviously, he's not the future and goal here, but doesn't that put Cam Talbot and his situation in a bit of a precarious situation because he's definitely a lame duck goaltender now?
Oh, without question. As soon as Bob Nicholson said that, first of all, the Mikko Koskinen signing was a collective decision as opposed to, you know, Peter Chiarelli. So clearly at that point, it was not just Chiarelli working in isolation. There were other people, you know, maybe, well, obviously out of necessity now, were in agreement. So the organization makes that move on Mikko Koskinen. And then when we learned that the club had reached out to Cam Talbot in advance of the Koskinen signing to say, hey, look, this is what we're thinking of doing. You know, and then they say that, you know, he took it very, you know, as well as possible, I suppose. But, yeah, he's absolutely a lame-duck goaltender. I mean, it begs the question. Look, Koskinen did not play terribly well against Detroit last night. Now that he is the number one, without question, how do you deploy those two goaltenders the rest of the way? You've got, essentially now it's Cam Talbot on a showcase tour. And by now, everybody should kind of know what Cam Talbot can or cannot do. But anyhow, the Oilers are stuck with a guy that, you know, is sitting there knowing he's on his way out. But they'd still like a really good performance from him every night. And he's got to say to himself, well, yeah, I need to be at my very best, even though I'm leaving here because, you know, I'm basically building a resume here for other teams.
Dave, how much faith is there in now interim GM Keith Gretzky? I mean, do they trust this guy to make some moves, per se, or is he just a placeholder until they find their next GM?
Well, again, go back to the last name. That probably buys you some time and space, maybe. You know, part of the backstory to all, or a lot of what went down today is the discussion around the Oilers' boys on the bus, old boys club, you know, from the great era team. You got Gretzky here in, you know, a couple of roles. Kevin Lowe is still in the Oilers organization, entertainment group, but he is not on the hockey side. Bob Nicholson addressed that directly today. You've got Craig McTavish still there. You've got all these vestiges, or a lot of vestiges, from the great Oiler teams. And one of the DNA, you know, in the DNA connecting good Oiler past, like the, you know, Stanley Cup run in 2006, all the way through the 12 years of really bad hockey, very unsuccessful hockey, is the idea that there have been old Oilers sort of planted here, whether they're good or not and worthy of the job doesn't matter because of what they, you know, what they have done in the past. And Darrell Cates, the owner, you know, is a fan at the end of the day, a very rich fan, but he's a fan and he grew up around those teams. So, you know, there are people asking, rightly so, is it time to end the old boys club here?
Dave Jamieson is our guest on NHL This Week. Dave is a host on TSN 1260 in Edmonton. We're talking about the Oilers' decision to fire Peter Chiarelli early this morning, technically. Dave, does Ken Hitchcock's voice increase in terms of roster and personnel moves as a result of this move? You have Keith Gretzky as the interim GM. You have some of the old boys you just mentioned. You know, Hitchcock was brought in to maybe to rectify this situation. Does he get a louder voice in the general manager's suite now?
You know, that's a terrific question, and one I really don't have an answer for. I mean, given Ken Hitchcock's resume and all of what he's done, you would hope, or at least I would, that his voice is heard. Because ultimately, you know, Ken Hitchcock has a vision for how his teams are going to play and hopefully win. I'm not sure Ken Hitchcock has all the players that he would deem necessary on this roster right now to get the job done. But I don't know, because now this is interesting ground, given what Bob Nicholson said about the Koskinen signing and the fact that it was more of a collective thing, and that Peter Chiarelli, because he's the general manager, was on that day, you know, he's the front guy on that. But they're, you know, so are they going to kind of do it by a group, with Nicholson obviously as the ultimate head of hockey and Keith Gretzky there on an interim basis, and you got Hitch there and he's still the owner. You know, how are they going to kind of muddle through this until they get ready for, well, obviously trade deadline, and then they got to get ready for a draft?
You know, Dave, sticking with where this organization is going, I'm sure you've heard this a lot today and in the previous days and weeks. A lot of people are saying that Edmonton should follow the Toronto model. When Brendan Shanahan came in 2014, he made a lot of changes to the scouting department, the analytics, all of that. Is that something that this Oilers brain trust needs to look at? Not just bringing in the right GM, but kind of changing the entire culture and the staff of this team. And that starts with scouting, and then you could look at the analytics and all that. But is that kind of bigger picture what the Oilers need to do here?
It's a texter asked a variation on that question today, and I you know, dealt with it on air, and I thought, God, this is a great, because I don't, and I guess we'll never know until, you know, either they reveal it or we get inside and see the operation, whether the Oilers are a pro analytics team. I'm assuming at this point, 2019, everybody is on board on some level with analytics, but I don't know if the Oilers are fully invested in it or they're still doing, you know, traditional player evaluation and assessment, or whether, you know, because the Toronto Maple Leafs, and good on them, they made a very big deal about, we're changing, we're going this way, and we're going to turn it over to a bunch of 20 and 30 somethings with, you know, who can do coding, and they're going to produce a lot of data that we can then turn into, you know, pretty smart hockey assessment of players. But the Oilers have never told that story, so I don't know where they're at in that. I think they do. Like I said today, that I think the Oilers should go off the grid, and that we get a guy, or they get a guy, sorry, that is, maybe we're not even talking about, you know, in terms of the usual candidates, the Steve Yzerman, who would be brilliant, but, you know, all, let's get serious here. I mean, he moved back to Michigan for a reason, to be with family and stuff. So is Edmonton going to be able to pull him here? But get a young, bright mind who can then build out an organization that is, you know, not connected in any way to the past. And you know, can forge a new path, because I still think the Oilers believe on some level that if you just played the way you did in 1990, everything's going to be okay.
Dave, I'm just so curious how the players have kind of digested this last 24 hours. They lose to Detroit, and then Ken Hitchcock comes out and he says, well, we're a one-line team, and if you can defend one line, then we're in trouble pretty much. And then Bob Nicholson comes out today, and he's talking the culture in the room and that the roster is somewhat close. I mean, how do the players interpret, you know, these conflicting messages?
Well, here's the interesting thing. Again, a very good question. You'd love to get into the mind, the collective mind of what the players are thinking. The Oilers time this last night, and I'll give them credit for this, so they made the decision, they've been talking about it, according to Bob Nicholson, for, you know, a few days at least, get to a decision, and a hard decision, before the game last night. Nicholson informs Chiarelli after the second period in the intermission so that, you know, Chiarelli can get out of the building, not draw attention to anything. It doesn't hit social media. Nobody in the organization other than a very few, select few, knew. And then what it allowed the Oilers to do, I mean, they play badly. They go about their usual media post-game stuff, and they leave. But before they leave, they're informed of what's happened there, and they go off. So they're not, the story from their perspective, we don't know yet. And now they've gone into a 10-day break. The only Oilers that I think people are going to be able to get a hold of here are McDavid and Draisaitl in San Jose at the All-Star game. So until we hear from McDavid, who's most important, and Draisaitl less so, but also a key part of this team, I don't think we're going to get a sense of, you know, and the players are probably going to say it's disappointing, you know, they're going to say the usual stuff. But it's an interesting question, and someone asked today how Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is thinking, because he's been here for all of it. Like, he has seen this mess through every iteration, and, you know, as the texter said, what is this guy thinking at this point?
And Dave, I say this kind of tongue-in-cheek, but I also say this kind of seriously. Would this not have been a perfect season to have the return of Oil Change, the reality TV for the Edmonton Oilers?
Yes, it would have. It would be, you know, Cleveland Browns-esque for sure. I mean, yeah, it would have been great to at least, you know, go behind or, you know, the curtain and see what's going on right now. But it might be even worse than we think. You know, we're seeing the fruits of their labor. So I can't imagine what it's like getting it to this point. So, you know, and it's quite frankly a bit of a mess.
Dave, last question for you. I was watching the broadcast last night, and superimposed behind the goaltenders is the hashtag loyalty. You know, I guess it's a campaign or whatever the Oilers are doing with that hashtag loyalty. And there's a funny spelling, so it includes oil as opposed to how you would normally spell loyalty. You know, is that just a marketing campaign, or is the brand, the Oilers brand in Edmonton, that diminished that they're worried, not for the future of the organization, because that's too dramatic, but really worried about what this is doing to this generation of Oilers fans?
Well, there's a couple of facets to that. First of all, that the hashtag and that logo and that branding was for a campaign. In arena, it may extend other places I'm not aware of, for the oil industry. And the people, there was a pregame ceremony and people in black t-shirts with that logo on it and that verbiage. They were out on the ice, and it's obviously, you know, I'm sure you've heard of how bad things are in the oil industry, and a lot of that lands here in Edmonton and this part of the province, well, the whole of the province, but certainly. So there was part of that, but I think the timing from the Oilers' perspective to roll out something called loyalty is, you know, it's curious, and, you know, they need to remind people that, you know, that they thank them for their support, because, yeah, last night, lots of no-shows for tickets. If you look at the secondary market and where people are trying to get cheap tickets, the prices are really low. The brand's taken a real hit here.
Dave Jamieson covers the Edmonton Oilers as part of the broadcast crew on TSN 1260. He's the host of the Dave Jamieson Show. Dave, appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
Always good to chat with you guys. Thanks.
Likewise, Dave. Thanks again. When we come back, we talk about the Carolina Hurricanes and their quest to make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. What do they have up their sleeve after a number of moves in the past week and 10 days? You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Well, we were so bad, Adam. It was like I almost dressed in and got out there because it was just I might have been as good what we were throwing out there because we just didn't want to play the way we're supposed to. You could just I didn't know what I was watching. That's the first time all year I can say that. I mean, the other game, I mean, you're going to lose games, but that was obvious we were going to lose that one.
Carolina Hurricanes head coach Rod Brindamore.
Rod the Bod.
Maybe he's going to become a player coach based on those comments. That was after the Hurricanes lost to the Ottawa Senators last week. Carolina Hurricanes, they made a signing, a big signing this week, getting Tuukka Teravainen to a contract extension. It's a five-year, $27 million contract extension worth $5.4 million per season. Teravainen on a team that doesn't score a lot of goals is an offensive driver for the Carolina Hurricanes. So I don't have an especially big problem with that contract. The Hurricanes are one of those really interesting teams a month out from the trade deadline. They made a bit of a splash last week when they got Nino Niederreiter from the Minnesota Wild in exchange for Victor Rask.
By the way, do you remember who the Hurricanes gave up and who else was in that deal?
For Teravainen?
Yeah. I had to go back and look. They gave up a second-round pick and a third-round pick. Teuvo Teravainen and Brian Bickell was the other guy.
Right, I remember
in that
Bickell
trade
going,
because
there was a salary dump.
Exactly.
They were had to get rid of, and so
that turned out to be a great trade.
For Carolina.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Tuukka Teravainen has blossomed into a, like I said, on a team that doesn't score a lot of goals, he is an offensive driver for the Carolina Hurricanes. It's a very good trade. You know, they're a very interesting team. They're 6 points out of the playoffs in the Eastern Conference, and they have between them and Pittsburgh for the final playoff spot, they have the Buffalo Sabres in between them as well.
That was a great game last night between the Flames and the Hurricanes.
Hurricanes dropping a 3-2 victory in defeat in overtime. Yep. So they do get the 1 point in Calgary, a tough place to get a point. So they're probably feeling okay about themselves after that. This is a team, the Hurricanes, though, that is desperate to make the playoffs. It's been 9 seasons since they last made the playoffs. They're new owner, Tom Dundon, has been very vocal about his want and his desire to have the team make the playoffs. And to be frank, he probably needs the playoff revenue to help, you know, with his bottom line with the Hurricanes playing in a non-traditional market that doesn't play before sellout crowds very often because they've been struggling for the last decade or so. But they also have Michael Ferland as a pending unrestricted free agent, a guy that allegedly they're far apart with in contract talks. Dougie Hamilton, the other guy they acquired from the Calgary Flames this offseason as part of that trade, is rumored to be already on the block as he's going through a bit of a struggle this year after some great offensive seasons in Calgary. It's just a really interesting dynamic what the Hurricanes are trying to do to get to the playoffs, but at the same time make some hard decisions about players who may or may not be on their roster for much longer.
Yeah, boys, as far as I'm concerned, Carolina has to be a buyer. I mean, you mentioned it. The Hurricanes have not made the playoffs in 9 years, and even though we didn't expect Pittsburgh to be in one of the wild card spots,
wild card spot.
Right, and 6 points, I mean, you put together a 4 or 5 game winning streak, Drew, and you're in a wild card spot, right? So you have to be buyers as far as I'm concerned, and yes, there is a good chance that Michael Ferland is traded, but I don't know why, but I just get the feeling that this Hurricanes team has something big cooking here, and you mentioned the Teravainen contract signing, and I agree, that's a good signing. And he's got, I think, 41 points in 49 games. He was on pace for, you know, around 70 points this year. He's having a great year. But when you look at this team, I mean, after Sebastian Aho and Teuvo Teravainen, they don't have a lot of offensive firepower.
Well,
Andrei Svechnikov is having a decent rookie year. Jordan Staal has been out of the lineup for a month now.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know the future, Shawnee, because it's a concussion, right? So we don't know how long Staal is going to be out for. But, you know, if I'm the Hurricanes right now, Don Waddell, I have to be big game hunting, right? And you hear that the Hurricanes are after a guy like William Nylander or maybe Kasperi Kapanen from the Leafs, but you got to think that, you know, they're thinking maybe even a guy like Artemi Panarin. I mean, the Hurricanes have a lot of cap space. And you hear, you know, some of the names you mentioned, Dougie Hamilton, Brett Pesci's another guy whose name has been thrown out there. So you wonder if Don
they have an abundance of defensemen.
They have an abundance of defensemen, and they also have a lot of youth. And as far as I'm concerned, it's unproven. So I think you want to make the playoffs, but if you get into the playoffs, you also don't want to be first-round fodder for whoever it is, you know, if it's Washington or if it's...
If they're going big game hunting...
Right now, I guess it's the Islanders, but...
If they're going big game hunting, as you're speculating...
Right.
It's got to be... It can't be for a guy like Panarin who might just up and leave at season's end. It's got to be for somebody who's going to be on that roster.
Well, if you think you can sign him... I mean, everyone seems to think that Panarin wants to be in New York, L.A. And that might be true, Drew. And I was using Panarin more as an example. I'm not saying Panarin specifically, but what I'm saying is a bigger name. Wayne Simmons is another guy. Obviously, Wayne Simmons is not in the same category as Artemi Panarin. But what I'm talking about here, Shawnee, and I want to get you in here, but what I'm talking about is I think they have bigger plans than just adding some depth pieces, right? Because the Hurricanes roster as it stands now, it just isn't good enough to compete with the big boys in the East, right? Tampa Bay, Pittsburgh, Washington, even though Pittsburgh's in a wild card spot, they're still, I think, one of the big boys. So I think they have to bring in a top six forward. We haven't even talked about goaltending.
That was just,
I mean, Curtis McElhinney has outplayed Peter Mrazek. So as far as I'm concerned, why aren't you taking a chance on a Cam Talbot, for example? I mean, you have to bring in, you have to upgrade your goaltending position. And you could argue that Cam Talbot isn't a big upgrade over Peter Mrazek. But as far as I'm concerned, that's the type of move they have to make. I don't know if Bobrovsky is in the conversation, but one of those types of goalies, Semyon Varlamov, I don't know.
It'll be interesting what the Hurricanes have to do. They are one of those teams you've got to keep a close eye on as we approach the trade deadline. They've already been active. Bring in Nino Niederreiter. I like that move for them. Will it be enough to get him to the playoffs? We'll find out in due time. When we come back, who's joining us?
We've got Darren Haynes coming up.
Darren Haynes. Thank you. I knew that. Darren Haynes covers the Calgary Flames for the Canadian Press in Calgary. He's going to join us next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of NHL This Week starts now on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Sean Assor and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Jets and Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. This segment of the show is brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. For freshly made and fresh frozen foods delivered right to your door, visit shopbernsteins.com. Going to get Darren Haynes of the Canadian Press on the line. The Calgary Flames just continue to be absolutely dominant in the NHL's Western Conference. They're atop the Pacific Division after last night's victory over the Carolina Hurricanes. The Flames are flying high. They'll next be in action on February the 1st against the Washington Capitals.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Canadian Press, he covers the Calgary Flames. We're pleased to be joined by Darren Haynes. Darren, good evening, and thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, and how are you guys?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
Hanging in there. That's day one of winter hockey season vacation, I guess, is what we're into.
That's right. The Jets have been off since their game last Saturday in Dallas. The Flames, of course, were defeated the Carolina Hurricanes 3-2 last night. It was a bit of a homecoming with, of course, the big trade from earlier this offseason between the Flames and the Carolina Hurricanes. You know, what was it like, you know, what was the atmosphere in the building, I guess, to see Dougie Hamilton and Michael Ferland return to Calgary where they had success, but it's been a trade that has really worked out well for the Calgary Flames. The players they acquired, Noah Hanifin and Elias Lindholm, have absolutely been core pieces of a very good Calgary Flames team so far this season.
Yeah, no animosity at all. Very popular players at the time the trade was made, it was really kind of widely panned. These were, you know, Michael Ferland is a guy that was a little bit of everything. He plays physical, and he had been what was viewed in this city as a pretty good fit and the best fit they've had at that point playing with Gaudreau and Monahan. So, well, what's happening? What, why are they changing that mix? What are they doing here? But no, as you mentioned, it certainly has worked out for, I'd say, I'd argue it's worked out for both teams. This is, looks like one of those win-win trades where Carolina is very, excuse me, Carolina is very happy with what they're getting out of Ferland and Hamilton, and Calgary, meanwhile, could not be more satisfied. I mean, Elias Lindholm has really turned out to be a real steal. I mean, the first thing they had to do was sign him to a contract because both him and Noah Hanifin came over as restricted free agents, which in itself is a bit of an odd scenario because normally when a GM is signing someone that's an RFA, it's someone that has played under their nose for 3 years, but these were two players new to the organization. And I think that's where Bill Peters, having intel on both those players, may have helped. And Bill Peters certainly knew what he had in Elias Lindholm because he stuck him on the first line, and it's clicked from the middle of September when it first tried, and it's never strayed. That's been the fit right from the start. And really, poor James Neal, who me, among many, thought they were going to be on the hunt, thought he was going to be on that first line spot. He's never really had a chance because Lindholm has grabbed it and ran with it, and he's having a career season and is a really good player. I had no idea he was that good. 200 foot, the defensive conscience on that line. So, yeah, I think everybody's happy. Ferland is in the UFA coming up, and a little bit of scuttlebutt that maybe Calgary might be interested in reacquiring him for the stretch run. So I guess we'll keep an eye on that one. I'm not sure I see that happening, but from a fan perspective, they like to kind of fantasize about that.
Darren, going back to James Neal, and you know, they signed him to the 5-year contract in the offseason, and I know you're asked about him a lot, but are there any signs that he's starting to improve his game and kind of get out of that doghouse, not just goals and assists, but starting to play a better overall game and contribute to the success of the Flames?
Baby steps, I'll call it. He snake bitten a little bit, like legit had a chance to, like had a really, made a really nice give and go play against Carolina, went to the net, puck, got the puck back. He played it absolutely to perfection, and the puck just suddenly leaped over a stick, like almost as if someone was poking a voodoo doll. It was comical almost, and he can only kind of roll his eyes at this point because there's been a few like that. So the chances are starting to come a little more frequently. You know, what's interesting is he's not a fast guy, and the game continues to get faster, and he's not getting any faster. And I am curious to see how this one plays out. I mean, this guy's going to be around for a while. This is a 5-year deal. The other thing, of course, with James Neal that you have to keep in mind is he has gone to the Stanley Cup final and ended up the runner-up both of the last 2 years. Nobody's played more playoff games the last two seasons than James Neal. So before you kind of pass any final judgments on that deal, I am curious to see the James Neal that comes out in the playoffs, and will he be maybe a little bit more kind of prickly and a little bit more cantankerous than we've seen? I think we've seen a guy that gets up for the bigger opponents. And so, you know, can he build on that once you get into kind of the meat of the season? We'll see. So I think you're starting to see him turn the tide a little bit. He's been in the score sheet a little bit more recently, but I'll tell you, he's a long way from earning that big paycheck that he got.
Darren, I have to ask you about the reaction of everything that's gone down in Edmonton, in Calgary. I mean, you know, the Battle of Alberta, it seems now the Battle of Alberta is just going to be the Oilers versus themselves. So I'm just curious as to how everything has gone on reaction-wise in Calgary with, I mean, I hate to use the word dysfunction, but what's going down in Edmonton.
Yeah, always a healthy rivalry between these two cities. It's been a shame that there's generations of fans that have never seen them meet in the playoffs. I mean, it was 1991, I believe, was the last time they met up. So that's borderline ridiculous. And both organizations, a lot of ineptness along the way because they haven't even been in the playoffs together other than once over that span. I'd like to see, I mean, I'm a guy that grew up on the 80s Battle of Alberta, and it was fantastic. So I'd like to see it get back there, and I thought there were signs that this this could be the year. I really did, but I'll tell you, they can't seem to get out of their own way in Edmonton, and not a lot of sympathy, though, being heard from this city. I can certainly tell you, as a city that I move around in, and I'm in various hockey dressing rooms as a coach, as a player, you know, there's not a lot of love lost, not a lot of sympathy for Edmonton. They've had their Stanley Cups and all that, so it's a rivalry that I think Calgary's kind of, yeah, kind of giving them a little bit of the, just kind of making fun of them a little bit, but we'll see how it goes. I mean, the thing is, like, Edmonton is not that far out of the playoffs, which is the ridiculous thing, that there's a real drop-off in the Western Conference right now. So we'll see how it plays out, whether they can kind of salvage the season as they seem to think they can, but a bit of a bad run there for Peter Chiarelli and I don't know. I think this, what happened today, I almost felt a little bit too little too late.
Darren Haynes is our guest on NHL This Week. Darren covers the Calgary Flames for the Canadian Press. Darren, you look at the Flames, and they're atop the Western Conference with 71 points, so they certainly can be considered a Stanley Cup contender, if not a Stanley Cup favorite at this point. Then you look at the goaltending, and everyone knows how important goaltending is come playoff time, and they have a starting goaltender in David Rittich, who has all of four professional playoff games in the AHL, none in the NHL. How concerning is that to a Calgary Flames fan come playoff time?
Yeah, I don't think that's a big concern. They, you know, this guy is beloved around here. The players love him. The management loves him. The fans absolutely adore him. So I think playoff experience is the least of their concerns. What's happened in this city is there's been a lot of chasing after goaltenders, trying to find a solution, trying to find an answer. This is a franchise that you go back to 1980 when Atlanta moved to Calgary. They have drafted and developed all of two starting goaltenders. So it's been the chink in the armor for years is the inability to develop goaltenders. And David Rittich isn't going to be a drafted and developed guy either, because he was a guy they kind of discovered in the Czech Republic when they were actually scouting somebody else. So they kind of happened upon him, but they really like him. And what he does and what he's been doing with this team is he's been giving them the clutch saves and the big saves at the moments in games when they really need them. So at the end of the day, he sometimes gives up two, sometimes gives up three, but he always seems to win because he makes the saves at the right times, and the players really rally around him. So I think his lack of playoff experience isn't really the concern. I think the biggest concern, if you were to look at the goaltending, is Mike Smith a decent, reliable backup plan? Mike Smith has really struggled, and so again, going back to Rittich's inexperience, you do want to have someone you can at least have a little bit of confidence in if something happens over the second half, or if Rittich, playing more games than he's played in his career, ends up getting a little weary. And so that's the one that I want to kind of keep an eye on over the next month and leading up to that trade deadline is Mike Smith still a viable backup option, or is his ship sailed? Because he's really struggled at times this year.
Darren, Mark Jankowski scored the go-ahead goal last night for the Flames. That was his eighth of the year, and last year was his first full-time year in the NHL. He scored 17 goals, but I think you'd agree he was streaky last year, and at times it looked like he was kind of non-existent on this team. But in his second full NHL season, how have you seen his game grow? Because a lot of Flames fans watched what he did in the American Hockey League, you know, former first-round pick back in 2012, and there were many fans that had high hopes, and I think still have high hopes for Jankowski. I believe he's only 24 years old, but what have you seen this year in Jankowski's game that maybe, you know, gives you you know, more reason for optimism that he has a higher ceiling in the NHL?
Yeah, well, and his story is kind of interesting because he finished off last year with a four-goal game in Game 82, got him up to 17 goals, pretty good output for a rookie season. And then through all the off-season changes that Brad Treliving made, he got demoted. So he had a 17-goal rookie season and then got demoted from the third to the fourth line. So he started the season in the fourth line and was even a healthy scratch in October a couple times. So I'm not sure he handled that all that well. I think he probably just kind of wore that a little more than he should have. But he's been better lately, and where he's really found kind of where he's found his game and an ability to really impact games and to kind of get himself going as shorthanded. You mentioned his 8 goals. Well, half of them are shorthanded, where he's tied for the league lead last time I checked. So he's one of their best penalty killers. It's a role that he can embrace. I think early in the season he didn't have a role. He wasn't PK, wasn't on the power play. I think that led to a little bit of uncertainty as well. But now he's got kind of some purpose, if you will, and his game is certainly is coming along. You know, everyone knows his story, a first-round pick who took forever to get to the NHL. I mean, he went a full 4 years of college and all that. But I think there is a player there. I don't know if he's a top six guy, but can he be a real dependable third line guy? I think he can be. He's got all the tools, all the attributes you'd want in a center. A big 6'4" frame, pretty good at the dot, and again can play special teams. So he's coming on. He's certainly been a lot better of late than he was in October, and I think that's a positive sign because that top line can't keep it up. They've been lights out. So they're going to need the Mark Jankowskis, the James Neals, the Sam Bennett. They're going to need some contributions over the second half and into the postseason.
Darren, it's so far it's been an absolutely incredible season for the Flames. I mean, 71 points in 51 games is pretty outstanding. I'm just curious, from someone like you who's immersed in the team as well as you are, what's been the most pleasant surprise from you this season with the Flames?
Well, you know, I think you have to look at two things. You know, when they brought in Elias Lindholm, they were looking for kind of a solution on that right wing of the top line. Had no idea that the impact it would have. So we've talked about how Elias Lindholm's having a good season. Well, look at the season Johnny Gaudreau's having, and he will be the first to say Elias Lindholm has been a huge addition for him, not just the opposite. So that's been a really good fit, and it's taken two guys in Gaudreau and Monahan, and it's raised their game. So that domination of that first line, they stay together on the power play, that's one thing. And the other thing I would point to is Mark Giordano is 35 years old, and he is playing out of his mind. For me, he's the best defenseman in the NHL this year. He's on a pace to almost score 90 points. There's only two defensemen at age 35 that have scored 80 points in the history of the NHL, Ray Bourque and Nick Lidstrom. Not too bad. So Mark Giordano, as the team captain, as the face of this organization, the guy that goes out there, plays hard every shift for 25 minutes, he's looking ageless. You would never know that he's 35 years old. He's playing like he's 25. So that's been a real pleasant surprise. And dragging along for the ride, who also has had a nice bounce back season, is TJ Brody, who's Mark Giordano's defense partner. Last year, it was Dougie Hamilton and TJ Brody, to be honest, while Hamilton was in Calgary, kind of struggled. So now Brody's refound his game again. No coincidence, he's playing with Giordano. So Giordano is having a great season. He's made Brody having a great bounce back season. And so those five guys, the top line and that top pairing together, have been real dominant force. And I don't think anyone saw that coming.
And Darren, what about Oliver Shillington as well? Back in 2015, I remember there were some scouts that thought Shillington should be a first-round pick, and the Flames got him with the last pick of the second round. And, you know, he's played 26 games now, and he's looking really solid on the back end.
Yeah, I think if you were maybe, was it a year out from that draft, or maybe 6 months, he was rated potentially as a top-five pick. Yeah, slid all the way to, in fact, Brad Schulman couldn't wait any longer. He made a trade with his old club that he used to be the AGM for, Arizona, to move up and grab Shillington with that final pick of the second round. So Shillington, it's an interesting story because Calgary, something again that we've never seen before, they have an all-rookie third pairing. But it wasn't Shillington to start. It was Juuso Välimäki, their first rounder from 2 years ago, and it was him and Rasmus Anderson. Välimäki sprained an ankle. He's been injured for about 2.5 months, and they brought up Shillington, another young guy, another guy 21, and sure enough, again, with two rookies on that third pairing, those guys have been you know, they're playing maybe 11, 12 minutes a night, so they're not being asked a lot. But to have an all-rookie pairing in the NHL is a bit daring. And they've been solid. And Shillington got his third goal the other night, and I've been pleasantly surprised. The knock on Shillington was he was too risky with his game. He'd make costly turnovers at the wrong time, but he's really kind of embraced the concept of less is more, and he's being a little more conservative, and he's got some of the best wheels in the NHL. So when he does get beat, he can get back faster than almost anyone. So that kind of mitigates that a little bit. So, yeah, a pleasant surprise, I have to be honest, on Oliver Shillington.
And the Calgary Flames are atop the NHL's Western Conference. They're second overall in the entire NHL. Darren Haynes covers the Calgary Flames for the Canadian Press. Darren, appreciate your time this evening. Thanks so much for joining us.
All right, enjoy the break.
Likewise, Darren. Take care. Thanks again.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. When we come back, Craig Anderson of the Ottawa Senators says, shrink the goal crease, better protect the goaltenders. Is it time for the NHL to make that move? Well, that's up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Philip Cheadle, the Czech winger, closes all the way off. And scores and barrels into Rask, and Rask is down. Cheadle did not hesitate one bit, and Rask is not even moving.
Well, isn't this still a penalty, Jack?
Our good buddy Jack Edwards on the call, that from the Bruins broadcast. Philip Cheadle right over to Rask. Rask out of the Bruins lineup now with a concussion. He joins Corey Crawford as goaltenders who've been sidelined with concussions, who are currently sidelined with concussions. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor with you in studio. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. The reason we played that audio is because Craig Anderson, Ottawa Senators goaltender, veteran goaltender in the NHL, spoke quite passionately earlier this week to Bruce Garriock of the Ottawa Sun, saying it's time for the NHL to crack down on net crashers. And Craig Anderson's suggestion was make the crease 6 inches smaller, and if a guy goes in the crease, then blow it down, which is very much like the international rule where basically you put any part of your skate in the crease, they blow it down on the faceoffs outside the zone. You won't have guys running into the goalie, Anderson said. Tuukka Rask is out with a concussion right now because a guy went to the net. I missed time because a guy went to the net hard. Let me ask you guys. Is there something to be said for Craig Anderson's comments here? Reduce the size of the crease, protect goaltenders, say, in that crease, players are not allowed.
Yeah, and I think you could definitely make an argument, boys, that the NHL, the NHLPA, the NHL Department of Player Safety should be protecting goalies more. But I want to go back to the Tuukka Rask incident, Drew, because the Jets were playing the Stars that night, and I was doing pre- and post-game with Kevin O. I wasn't watching that game live, but I saw the highlight, and you know, initially I thought, okay, Philip Cheadle of the New York Rangers, you know, he goes in really hard into the net. He should have stopped. But, you know, watching the replay a couple more times, I mean, Charlie McAvoy gives him a pretty big bump there, a pretty big check from the side because, you know, if you haven't seen it, Cheadle is going in kind
Cheadle's
of on
got
a head of steam. It's not a full breakaway. It's not even really a partial breakaway. He's coming down the wing at an angle, and Charlie McAvoy is on the other side trying to kind of cut him off, and he obviously isn't there in time. But, you know, McAvoy, as I mentioned, gives him a pretty big bump into Tuukka Rask, so I don't know how much you can blame Cheadle here, but the point is, guys, I think you're seeing too many goalies run across the NHL. And this isn't anything new, right? You think back to Shawnee, Chris Kreider, and Carey Price, right? There were a lot of That's Habs fans that wanted Chris Kreider to be suspended.
That was in the playoffs.
For the rest of the playoffs for that. I don't even remember. Did he even get a suspension for that?
I don't think so.
I mean, he got anything for that. But the point is, I mean, Tuukka Rask, by the way, he was on a heater. I mean, Tuukka Rask was playing maybe the best hockey of the last 5 years. His save percentage has been incredible over the last couple of weeks, and he's been winning a lot of games for the Bruins. But, you know, you wonder, you know, what rule could be in place to really prevent that, right? Because the game is so fast, and you have, you know, these hits coming at such high speeds right in front of the goaltender. But I think you have to also ask yourself, you know, do players really try to stop up in that situation? And if the crease was smaller, you know, maybe that type of hit doesn't happen. I don't know. But when you're talking about Craig Anderson being so vocal, you know, this is a guy that, Shawnee, has had concussions and all that. And, you know, he seems to be pretty fed up with it. So maybe this is something that the NHL has to look at more closely.
Fair point. I mean, he's coming from experience, right? This is a guy who's probably been run a few times and has had to miss time because of a head injury. But to me, and this is just, I've never played in net in my life, but isn't it kind of one or the other? You make the crease smaller, or you make it so that the minute a skate touches the crease, the play is blown dead? Because if you shorten the crease and you shorten the diameter of the half circle, doesn't it compress the goaltender into the net more, allowing people to come closer? If you keep the crease the same size, but you make it that the minute a blade touches or a foot touches the crease, it's blown dead, don't they have more safety, more area of safety? And also, goaltenders are all about angles, right? If you limit the crease, they're going to probably stay in that crease more often than not to protect themselves, and then you may see a sacrifice in goaltending and net minding and potentially allow more goals. So I don't know if the goaltending brethren around the NHL would want that, but it's interesting. But in my opinion, it would be one or the other, and to me, a more safe approach would be you touch the crease, more like international hockey, you blow a play dead.
Here's Anderson. He continues with his comments. There's lots of other situations where guys are going to the net and it's hard. If a goalie is in his crease and a guy enters his crease, then blow it down. If you want to take away some space, goalies are all bigger than 6'2", and they're not playing outside their crease normally. If the goalie is in his crease and the guy goes in his crease, make it black and white, automatic, and then you won't have any more controversy. So this is a goalie saying, the goaltending brethren won't be overly upset if you shrink the crease as long as you also give us the protection. Should goaltenders be treated like almost quarterbacks in the NFL? It's so difficult to hit a quarterback in the NFL legally because they're the key to basically any team. I don't know if goaltenders are necessarily the key to any team because there's some quality backup goaltenders. In the playoffs, they can be. Should the NHL treat, you know, goaltenders like they're basically China dolls and they're porcelain and they're more or less off limits to any physical contact? We heard Connor Hellebuyck this year complain
about
getting run in the net as well. So it's not like this is just Craig Anderson. It seems like it's fairly widespread throughout the league.
Yeah, I think the NHL, as we talked about, Drew, they need to take better care of goaltenders. But when you say that, you know, they have to treat them like China dolls and you can't touch them, I think you're taking it a little far there. Maybe you're half joking when you say that, but I mean, hockey is a lot different than football. So I realize, you know, you can make some analogies between the NHL and the NFL, but the quarterback position
goalies need more protection than currently getting.
And I mentioned that multiple times this segment. But when you talk about treating them like China dolls, I mean, hockey is a much more physical game. It's a more fluid game. It's not stop and start, and there's not set plays as much as there are in the NFL. But the point is, I think it's not just about making the crease smaller. It's about penalizing players more that run at the goaltenders.
When we come back, Paul Gackel joins us from San Jose. That's where the center of the hockey universe is going to be this weekend with the All-Star Game in the Bay Area. Paul Gackel joins us next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number two. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys, located at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherbourne. At Keener Jerseys, making a better jersey is what they do. To have your jersey customized or to order new jerseys for your rec team, go to KeenerJerseys.com. Keener Jerseys, they're on your team.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We head out to San Jose, where we're pleased to be joined by Paul Gackel. Paul is, of course, the San Jose Sharks beat writer for the Mercury News. Paul, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure, Paul. Obviously, the center of the hockey world is San Jose this weekend with the All-Star Game festivities, and we'll get to that, but first I want to talk about the Sharks.
Yeah, don't remind me about that.
you got a party you got to plan for all the media, is that it?
Well, I'm a little jet-lagged coming off a four-game road trip, and was up at 3 in the morning to get out of Washington, D.C. this morning, so... Yeah, it's kind of cutting into what is usually my golf weekend, so we'll see how it goes. But I'm sure once I get a good night's sleep and dive into the All-Star festivities, it should be a fun event to see up close. I've never been to one before, so it's pretty cool.
Well, Paul, as a former Winnipegger, I can assure you that our golf weekend has been cut into as well in sitting here in the middle of January. Paul, yeah. Obviously, you mentioned the four-game road trip, and it was a dramatic victory for the San Jose Sharks last night.
Yeah, Paul, did you tell Evander Kane to score with 1 second left?
Jeez, man, wow. I think I might have been caught with my head down on that one, I won't lie.
Yeah, you were typing up your game story, then you had to press delete real quick.
I was ready to hit the send button, and I heard the goal horn go off.
Yeah, and then it's like, okay, rewrite time, got to start fresh.
Delete.
Yeah, exactly. Delete. You know, lost in that game, though. 7-6 victory for the Sharks, so that's a terrific win for a reeling Washington Capitals team. But lost in that victory is that the Sharks are the first team to allow 6-plus goals in 4 consecutive games since the Mighty Ducks did it back in December of 1995. Hat tip to Stats by Stats for that information. How concerned should people be about the San Jose Sharks goaltending? Martin Jones doesn't look like the Martin Jones of past years so far this season.
You know, I've said it a lot, but I do think that is, you know, one of the top concerns for this hockey team because, you know, let's be honest, if you're going anywhere in the Stanley Cup playoffs, you just need elite goaltending. I mean, that's something that you have to have, and we haven't really seen Jones play up to the level that we've seen him play in the past. But I will say this stretch of games that we're talking about where they surrendered 24 goals against in four games, I don't think too much of that is really on Martin Jones, to tell you the truth. Aaron Dell was in the first game, so you got to throw that one out. And then you're playing 3 games without Erik Karlsson when you already have Mark Edward Vlasic on the shelf. And they just played some really, really loose defense over the last 3 games, you know, a lot of Swiss cheese out there. And to tell you the truth, Martin Jones made, you know, a handful of really big saves in that game last night. They kept it, you know, like, a 7-5 game and a 2-goal deficit and sort of allowed the Sharks to crawl back into that one. Having said that, and going into that stretch, he had won 8 games in a row, and I believe his save percentage was up around 927 or 928 in a 6-game stretch. So that's trending in the right way. Having said that, if you look at the larger sample size, yes, there is reason to be concerned. He's been sub-900 for most of the year, and that's just not going to cut it in the Stanley Cup playoffs, especially if you get into a situation where maybe you have to go through, you know, the Vegas Golden Knights, the Calgary Flames, and the Jets or the Nashville Predators down the road. But, you know, he's been really great in the playoffs throughout his career. You know, that's been the story with Martin Jones. When they've needed him to be there, he's been there. They had some big wins in the month of January over Tampa Bay Lightning. They snapped their 16-game point streak. They went out, and he really stood on his head and actually almost single-handedly got them that win in Vegas on January 10th. And then he was sensational in the win over the Penguins. So he is trending in the right direction. I would say that is one of the top concerns, but still kind of playing the wait-and-see game.
Paul, what's the latest on Erik Karlsson? He obviously didn't play last night. He's missed the last 3 games. He's part of the Sharks contingent at the All-Star game. Are you expecting Karlsson to play at the All-Star game? And, you know, what was the injury that he's been dealing with the last week or so?
Basically, all we know that is that it's lower body. He was seen limping after logging 25 minutes and 43 seconds in a loss to the Arizona Coyotes a week ago tonight, and he was held out for most of the third period the night before when they beat the Penguins. So definitely a lower body situation for Erik Karlsson. But like I said, you know, held out of the third period, most of the third period against the Penguins, still logs 25-plus minutes the next night. Took pre-game warm-ups in Tampa, then decided not to go and has missed three straight. So it doesn't look like it's a super, super serious type of injury. Probably the type of thing he would have played through, you know, if it was later in the season or into the playoffs, must-win type of situations. But the Sharks have the, you know, everybody has the All-Star break coming up, and then the Sharks have their five-game bye week right after that. So by shutting him down, last week, he could get a full 16 days of rest to heal up whatever it is that's ailing him. And that's why I think it's probably pretty near impossible that you're going to see him play in the All-Star festivities this weekend. Yeah, maybe he comes out there for the skills competition and does something light that's not going to be too demanding or anything. But I'm just thinking, you know, if you have the opportunity to shut it down for 10 more days, why throw him in the All-Star game? Why throw him into an exhibition? But all the indications at this point would suggest that it's not like a super, super serious thing. Obviously something you'll keep an eye on. He had been just sensational, really, since the beginning of December. So the Sharks are going to need him at his best in going down the stretch run here and into the playoffs, because when Carlson, when his game started to come together there in December, it just turned this club into a completely different team.
So, Paul, just a follow-up question to that. You mentioned that most likely Erik Karlsson's not going to play in the actual All-Star game on Sunday, but there's a good chance that he competes in the skills competition. So does that mean there would be a replacement for the All-Star game, and would the expectation be that that's Timo Meier?
That's a great question. I'm not entirely sure. And just to be completely up front, I'm just reading tea leaves here. Maybe he does play. I don't know. I would just say conventional wisdom would say that it would probably be a better idea to keep him off. And who knows what's up with the skills competition and all that. But, I mean, I would think it would be Mark Giordano. But then again, you kind of need to get the ball rolling on that, I guess, if that were going to be the case. But Giordano certainly deserves to be there.
I guess it doesn't necessarily have to be a member of the Sharks.
It doesn't necessarily have to be a member of the Sharks, though they might want to keep it that way just because it is in San Jose and it's a hometown thing. But that said, you know, if I was going to pick a guy on the Sharks to throw into that game, I don't think it would be Timo Meier right now. You know, he's riding a stretch of games where he's only had one goal in 18 games, and Tomas Hertl has just been a beast lately. That's probably the way I would go if I had to pick a player. It would probably be Tomas Hertl or Winnipeg's favorite hockey player, Evander Kane, because he's had 14 goals and 26 points in his last 23 games and has been a big part of this charge. Hurdle's at 10 goals and 17 points in 14 games. So I'd probably go in that direction if you were going to pick somebody from the Sharks to be that representative. But you think you'd want to go with a defenseman, and it seems like Giordano certainly deserves that one.
Paul, a term that Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice uses a lot here in Winnipeg is a driver. If someone can be a driver on a line, they can be reliable to, you know, carry a line and be responsible. And someone you just mentioned, Tomas Hertl, I mean, hat trick last night, the game winner in overtime. I mean, is this guy really turning into a real force for the San Jose Sharks?
Undoubtedly. And I would say that his line, that line that he's skating on right now with Kane and Donskoy, you know, probably the Sharks' top line, if you're going to be absolutely completely honest about it, you know, when they, you know, wear the jerseys and the colors and practice and things like that, and when they do their pregame warm-ups, it's still Jumbo's line that goes first. You know, you got to throw a little bit of respect to number 19, and you also got to throw some respect to Logan Couture for everything he does for that team and the role that he plays. But in all honesty, it's Tomas Hertl, Evander Kane, and Jonas Donskoy right now. They're playing usually the most minutes in the last string of games and taking the most shifts and going out there against some of the top lines in the NHL. And he's just really turned into a legitimate center. And, yeah, hat-trick last night, but he also had a hat-trick on January 15th against the Pittsburgh Penguins. And you know, I think when Hertl first came into this league, everybody thought of him, you know, he's going to be this young, dazzling kid with the four-goal game and, you know, the shot between the legs and all that. But what he really is he's just a big, tough, strong power forward. He's so tough down low. He's strong on the puck. You can't get it away from him. He's tough around the net, scores a lot of his goals in and around there, still has that skill where he can make a move when he needs to, and just a real force on the puck. And his emergence, you know, just a really big development for the San Jose Sharks to be able to throw that into the mix there with Couture and Thornton. It kind of sets that center alignment up pretty nicely, because he had been playing on Logan Couture's wing, you know, all of last year and up until the Christmas break. And Pete DeBoer made a move coming out of the Christmas break to drop him. Initially, it was dropping him down to third line center and giving him his own line. But I don't think you can call that the third line anymore. He's a big boy. He's arrived, and he's going to be a force in the Western Conference, no doubt.
Paul Gackel is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Paul, of course, covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. You know, Paul, we mentioned Erik Karlsson. He's out of the lineup, and he's been absolutely on fire after a bit of a slow start in San Jose. No talk. I mean, you don't hear anything about a potential for a contract or a contract extension. Are they just sort of shelving those conversations until the season's end at this point in time?
Well, they did have, supposedly there is the beginning of some talks. His agent was down in Tampa last week. We were in Tampa on Saturday, and his agent was there and supposedly had some conversations with general manager Doug Wilson. And, you know, Doug likes to keep that stuff mostly pretty quiet. But I don't anticipate that you're going to see, you know, he's eligible to sign a contract extension come February 25th after the trade deadline. But I wouldn't anticipate that you're going to see Karlsson sign an extension with the Sharks in season. You know, maybe it's 50-50 right now. Who knows? I mean, those are tough things to sort of prognosticate. But my sense is Karlsson wants to see how this plays out. You know, if the Sharks get bounced in the first round and his trade and the acquisition is viewed as a failure and they're under the microscope and taking a lot of heat, maybe he goes, screw this. You know, this isn't that fun being here. I don't want to be in San Jose, and I'll test it out. You know, if they go on and win the Stanley Cup, that could make him think quite differently. So he might want to see how this whole thing plays out with the Sharks. From what I understand, you know, he is getting pretty comfortable with the team. He did come out when Ottawa was here last week and acknowledged that both he and his wife have really started to take to the area and are just enjoying being in Northern California. So that's obviously, you know, a good sign for Sharks fans. And, but, you know, at the same time, I could see him wanting to see what else is out there. You know, he came to San Jose in a trade. This is sort of a once in a lifetime opportunity for him to test the market and, you know, be courted. And maybe that's a fun thing. And, you know, he wasn't shy about letting the world know last year when there were rumors that the Lightning were interested in him, that he, you know, was a destination that he was interested in. He's very good friends with Victor Hedman. You saw him, you know, at the All-Star game last year. They dressed up as Pirates together. He stayed at Hedman's home on Devil's Island down there in Florida for the entire weekend. And when I was in Tampa, the word that I was getting was, you know, the Lightning's cap situation is pretty tight and they have a lot of moving parts, but if a guy like Erik Karlsson really wanted to play there and a guy like that comes along, you find a way to make room for him. So that could certainly be a possibility. I've heard some talk that he's, you know, a really big fan of New York City. Who isn't? So, you know, maybe the Rangers make a run at him. So there's a lot of ways that Erik Karlsson could go. I don't see this, you know, getting wrapped up before the end of the season, and should be another busy offseason here in San Jose.
Paul, last question for you here. You mentioned Mark Edward Vlasic earlier, and he's in the first year of a 7-year contract. As you mentioned, he's injured right now. He was placed on injured reserve earlier this week. But there's some rumblings that, you know, maybe Mark Edward Vlasic's future in San Jose is in doubt. He's not having the best year. But what's your take on that for a guy who, you know, just as recently as 4 years ago was a member of the Canadian Olympic team on the back end?
Well, he did have a really tough go to begin the season, no doubt. You know, he's at a minus 13, I believe, which is the worst on the team at this point, which is really rare because, you know, this guy has been just a sensational shutdown defenseman. I mean, he's not a guy that puts the puck in the net and racks up a lot of points, but there he is on Team Canada with the Duncan Keiths and the Drew Doughtys of the world because he is so spectacular defensively. And, you know, really had a slump to start this year, the first 3 months of the season. And quite honestly, the Sharks looked a heck of a lot better with him when he got injured on January 2nd, and they were able to then, you know, bump up both Brent Burns and Erik Karlsson's minutes and ride each of those guys 27, 28 minutes a night and give Karlsson, you know, the sort of shutdown responsibilities against the Sidney Crosbys and the Nikita Kucherovs. And, you know, Tampa came in here riding a 16-game point streak. Vlasic's out of the lineup, Bronze out of the lineup. That's their shutdown pairing. And the Sharks, you know, held them to just 20 shots on goal. Not a lot of teams have done that. So there's certainly an argument to be made that, you know, maybe the Sharks are a better team giving some of that responsibility over to Erik Karlsson. And I do question in the long run, does it really work, you know, with these three guys on separate pairings, Vlasic, Karlsson, and Burns? Like, can you really divvy out, you know, all the minutes? Don't you need to kind of show Erik Karlsson that he's the man if you want to keep him? That said, I will say Mark-Edward Vlasic has a full no-move clause. So, you know, in order for him to be dealt somewhere, you know, you'd have to make life pretty uncomfortable for him to want to do that. And I think you'd have to be, you know, fairly certain that Erik Karlsson's coming back before you make that move, because then you're looking at a reality where maybe you don't have Erik Karlsson or Mark-Edward Vlasic, and boy, that blue line takes a different form awfully quickly. So I think some of those rumors are just people musing. I haven't heard anything to suggest that he would be on the move. The only way I could see Vlasic being on the move is if they knew they had Karlsson in the bank, and maybe that's something that would go down at the draft. That wouldn't go down in the middle of the season. And I would also be very, very cautious about giving up on Mark-Edward Vlasic at this point. I mean, the guy has had three bad months, but he's had a spectacular NHL career. He's only 31 or 32 years old, so he has a way to go. And I just think this is the first time he's faced some real adversity in his career. He's never had a slump like this. He's never struggled, and I think that there was a loss of confidence. You know, I talked about this actually pretty extensively with Pete DeBoer when we were up in Calgary on New Year's Eve, and he said, you know what, Gax, you hit the nail right on the head. It's, you know, he lost his confidence, and then, you know, you're trying to figure out how to get it back, and he thought he was starting to come out of it. I just wouldn't give up on Vlasic yet. I just can't see a situation. You know, I understand why people look at it and they go, first year of a big contract, he's struggling, the Sharks might want to get rid of him. But realistically, that's just not something they can do until they know what's going on with Erik Karlsson. If Karlsson were to come back, you know, even if Vlasic turned things around, I would go, okay, well, maybe that's something that you have to look into, because I do think that, you know, I just wonder if that's not too many horses, you know, on one blue line, and I don't know how you balance it all out. But that said, we're a long ways away from that. And, you know, sports are like stocks. You know, you don't sell an asset like that when it's at its, you know, at its low point. You know, you want to get a return on that. So I wouldn't expect to see anything happening this winter.
Paul Gackel covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. Paul, appreciate your time this evening. Get some rest. You have a busy weekend ahead of you.
Yeah, and I'll be up there actually a week from today. So if you guys are kicking around, maybe I'll see you in the Cordon area or something like that. We can have a sip and see what happens.
We can do that.
Better yet, Paul, we'll take you out for a beer. Just text us and we'll do it up.
Sounds good.
Thank you, Paul. We'll see you soon, buddy.
All right, boys.
Take care.
We'll talk to you later.
Yeah.
Okay, bye.
Paul Gackel from the San Jose Mercury News. When we come back, one final segment on this Wednesday evening. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
One final segment, Wednesday evening. You're listening to NHL This Week. It's brought to you by our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. All this week at Rumors, starting tomorrow, the Bridget Bishop Tour featuring Christina Hutchinson and Corinne Fisher. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. You got a show tomorrow. You got two shows Friday, two shows Saturday. Don't miss out on your opportunity. Get those tickets now at rumorscomedyclub.com. A quick look at the out-of-town scoreboard. earlier today in Toronto, the Washington Capitals losing streak extended to 7 games. Alex Ovechkin gets 1 point, so he ties Sergei Fedorov for the most points in the history of the NHL by a Russian player, but the Capitals lose 6-3 to the Maple Leafs. In Montreal, the Coyotes thought they tied the goal, then they challenged on offside. It was ruled no goal. The Canadiens went on to win by a 2-1 margin over the Coyotes. In Vancouver right now, halfway through the second period, the Carolina Hurricanes and the Canucks are tied up at 2 goals apiece. That's a big game for both those teams as they scramble to get back into playoff positioning. After 40 minutes in Anaheim, the St. Louis Blues lead the Anaheim Ducks by a 3-1 margin. The Ducks with a grand total of 9 shots on goal through 40 minutes of play. So as you can see, things are going well for the Anaheim Ducks. They lost Andre Kasha for most of the rest of the season with a torn labrum, so injuries continue to be a problem there. In Colorado, the Wild are up 5-2 halfway through the third, and after 40 minutes in Vegas, the Predators are up 2-1 over the Golden Knights. That's it for the Wednesday edition of NHL This Week. A big thank you to our guest, Dave Jamieson. We were joined by Darren Haynes and Paul Gackle. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on our website, illegalcurve.com, on tsn1290.ca, and of course, wherever you get your podcasts. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support them because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Chris Curry doing a great job behind the board. For Sean Asor, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck, and thanks for listening to TSN Radio 1290.